Happy Saturday with Turtle with you for E. Can we put up 2.5 finger? Kinda, sorta, 2.5 hours is the answer, is when I'll be with you for today. Until Atlanta United pregame with Abe Gordon and company coming your way. E, it's been a long, stressful 15 or so hours for your boy.
I know you were up to about 2 o'clock or so last night, right?
We had the inaugural Falcons flyover, which I am now hosting for this season, and I couldn't be more proud and excited to do so. But, E, we had ourselves a hell of a broadcast last night because, at least for the first hour, we weren't talking about the game. We were talking about what happened, unfortunately, last night
at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
So, yeah. Grant McCauley and Mike Johnson on the post game handed it off to me. And I'll tell you this. I kid you not. As I was turning on the microphone, I got the update from the Lions that Mo Norris was going to be okay. And that was the biggest blessing, not only for him, but it gave me a sense of freedom to be able to actually talk about the game at some point during the show. Because if we didn't get the update, it would have been hard to do a show, man.
Yeah, I mean, Damar
Hamlin.
Thank you. It seems like it was a long time ago, but it wasn't. A long time ago, and you know the game's dangerous. And I was at a high school game last night before the I caught the second half, or what was part of the second half when I got home. And even it was a high school scrimmage. I was doing my homework for the Cookie Kale Classic, watching one of the teams that I'll be calling. Every kid out there was wearing the shell during the scrimmage.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Okay.
And I'm like, man, you know, how long will it be maybe before those shells
are mandatory?
Yeah. Exactly.
No, you're 100% right, and. You know, again, it was one of those things where I'm watching. I'm like, oh, my God, I hope he's okay. And you could tell something was wrong by the length of time it took to get the situation figured out, to get him properly onto the stretcher and into the ambulance and out of the stadium. Usually if there's an injury, you take a break, you come back, and things are mostly sorted out, if not fully sorted out, and they're ready to resume action. It was 2 or 3 different commercial break lengths before the situation was able to get Mo Norris out of the stadium safely and into the stretcher and to Grady, where his mom was waiting for him and his teammates showed up last night. And he put out a post this morning thanking everybody for their support and their well wishes. And that was just great to hear and great to see. We're going to welcome in Will McFadden coming up in 15 minutes. He was there last night. We'll get the sights and the sounds. We'll talk about what happened with Mo Norris. We'll also talk about the game. But, E, before I get into what I thought about the game, I was a bad boyfriend today.
You what are you talking about, man? You got a batting 1,000 average, don't you?
I was.
What, you until forget, you forget a birthday? You forget something?
No. I got a text from the girlfriend yesterday. She was like, hey, I had some plans change. I was going to celebrate one of my girlfriend's birthdays next weekend, but we're actually going to do it this weekend. And we're going to be at a hotel in Buckhead.
Okay.
So why don't I come over in the morning? I'll take you to work, and then I'll go straight to the hotel. And I was like, sounds good. She's like, cool. I'll bring breakfast, and, you know, we'll hang out. I was like, all right, I'll get to sleep. I'll get home at 2:30. If I can get to bed by 3, she comes over around 10:30, 7 hours of sleep. Will that be enough? No, it was not. When she came over, I was...
Okay, but she's an understanding young lady. I've met her.
But she came over to hang out, not to, you know... She wasn't tired, so she wasn't... trying to nap.
So you have not gotten to a point where you have the, let's say, what's the word I'm looking for? Just the reasonable thought process that, hey, I know she's going to be disappointed, but I need to say, babe, I'm going to be tired and I got to work tomorrow afternoon. Because practically you had 12 hours in between your shifts, give or take.
Yeah, I mean, I'm back here. I got off the air at 2 a.m. yesterday and I'm back here at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So pretty much by the time, yeah, you know, I mean, thank you. You have one of the, you have the second shortest commute in the building.
Josh beats me by a couple of blocks.
Yeah, you know, eventually you'll get to the point where you'll say, well, I mean, babe, I'm working late. I got to be back tomorrow. I don't know, you know. Now, I mean, are you guys a year in? Year plus yet?
Year at the end of the month.
Year at the end of the month.
Yeah.
I ain't trying to put all your business in the street. Have you guys exchanged keys, things like that? Where are you at in this thing?
Well, she has free reign to come over. Oh, she doesn't have my key, but she can come over whenever.
Because you can just be like, hey, babe, come on in, bring the breakfast. I'll wake up at noon, make yourself comfortable.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. This wouldn't have happened if the plans didn't change. Yeah, originally it was going to be next Saturday, but she got excited. She was like, oh, well, because we were going to hang out tomorrow initially. Yeah. And she's like, oh, well, now I can see you Saturday and Sunday. And I was like, sure, sounds good. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how tired I was going to be, man. Because it wasn't only the fact that it was, you know, my first flyover. It was the type of show that we had to do.
Oh, yeah. That full interaction show is very intense. Now, you got some taste of that when you did the post-draft show, because I did the post-draft show a couple times. That's high intensity, taking all those calls. Everybody's excited. Everybody's got their opinion, what they saw, what they feel. And, it goes.
And then you
goes
mix in what happened on the field, and it was a lot. But here we are, and we're ready to rock and roll. But I do owe my girl. I got to buy her, like, some flowers or something, because she came in, and she was all excited to see me, and I was just...
So I'm going to give you, as an old hotel executive, you know what hotel they're staying at the up there in Buckhead?
I do.
Call up there, send something via room service.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, brother, I got your back, man.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, just say, hey.
Look at that. You
call up there, say, hey, my friends are staying there. What type of, you know, small, you can even do a welcome gift. I mean, that they've already checked in before you get off. I don't know how quickly you are with your, you know, when we got a 6-minute break. Like, hey, send a welcome gift to their room or something tomorrow. Or you can just have it, hey, you guys have a room service credit courtesy of Turtle. Order something that he's already called up and put it on your room. It's a room service credit. I got you.
408, you get the gold show MVP producer E. Slaughter coming in. But last night, and you know what? I'm actually going to do that, I think. That's a really good idea. Last night, obviously a lot to like of the game that was played. I'll tell you what, if that's the way the defense is going to be flying around all season, I'll tell you what, we got a chance, boys and girls. We got a chance, ladies and gents. If that's the way that the defense, specifically the defensive line and the secondary, are going to be flying around like that, so you're telling me we have a chance? Yes, sir. That was the biggest takeaway for me, was the defensive intensity, the action, the active nature of the defense. I wasn't sure about Ulbrich, but if that's what we're going to get, man, was that impressive. And man, was that refreshing to see that defense swarm and hive and get to the ball the way that they did last night. DeMarco Helms delivered the boomstick. That was impressive. It was also a clean hit. I don't care what anybody says. E, you're an official. That was a clean hit, right?
Absolutely. No flag on that. Absolutely. That's the way they – that's the way they tell us to officiate it. He led with his shoulder. His head was up. He saw his target. Clean play.
I absolutely agree. And that was a highlight reel in and of itself. So that was awesome. Ruka Rororo had a really good game. Brandon Dorlis. TQ Graham specifically, he looked really good. It's going to be tough to sort out the defensive line interior rotation. A couple of interesting decisions that I'm going to ask Will McFadden about. Why didn't Carlos Washington play? Isn't he in line to be the third running back? They didn't want to see how he was doing. Why didn't Casey Washington get involved? What about Braylon Trice? Why didn't we see much of him last night? So there are some questions that I'm going to ask Will McFadden about from last night's game. And then also, do we find our backup quarterback? Easton Stick was pretty sharp. He's got a nice little arm on him. He was accurate. He had a very nice touchdown pass to Chris Blair. And I'll tell you what, let me see more of him for the next couple of weeks. And then if Kirk Cousins goes bye-bye in a trade, we may have our guy already in-house. He was, 11 of 15 for 150 yards and a touchdown? Pretty good. And he was on fire in that final drive with the two-minute. They were humming. I wouldn't mind Easton Stick as a backup. He has NFL experience. He looks like he's calm and poised in the pocket, controlled the offense. But the running game, too, right? 11 carries for 22 yards? What was that? Isn't the bread and butter of the Atlanta Falcons offense supposed to be run the damn ball? Where was that? Was that by design from Zach Robinson? Did he want to see what Easton Stick could do with all those different receivers, David Sills and Drummond and Blair, who were all putting on a show last night? Interesting. So there's a lot to break down and a lot to digest from this game, obviously outside of the Mo Norris situation. It's going to be very interesting to see who continues to get reps along the interior of the defensive line, who continues to get reps in the secondary. D. Alford had a strong night. Is he going to be your starting nickel? Clark Phillips, another guy that didn't play last night. Why? Is he on the outs? Is it because he's on the outside, or is it because he's on the inside? Track to make the team. I don't know. Storm Norton, we know, didn't get any reps last night, but their seventh-round draft pick, the big kid out of Wisconsin, stood in there and I thought played pretty well. A lot of takeaways from last night's game that I'm excited to get to with Will McFadden coming up here in about less than 10 minutes on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Busy show for you. We'll hear from Rowan Kavner, Fox Sports MLB. What does he think about the Braves? Yes, Jurickson Profar. E, did you see the catch that Jurickson Profar made today?
I did not. I didn't realize they were playing doubleheader until Fricky told me. Because I knew they were playing at 7 o'clock tonight. I didn't know they were having doubleheader.
They have a five-game set with the Marlins going on right now.
Because I'm leaving here and heading up there for the 7:15.
Did you get those tickets for free?
I did.
Okay.
I've been invited. So
Nice.
I'm invited.
Well, because I certainly wouldn't pay to go watch that product right now.
Yeah.
They did win the first game of the doubleheader. But here's the thing. Jurickson Profar made a hell of a catch, and everybody's going nuts on Twitter. That's like, your parents taking all your Halloween candy and you being happy that they gave you a piece of candy corn. Like, the season's still over. Like, I guess you're allowed to get excited for a highlight, but I mean, even if it is the catch of the year, who cares? Okay, great. Now you're 17 games under 500. Whoop-de-freaking-do.
How quickly can we get to the end of September and get ready for next year? This is bottom line. Profar comes back next year. Everybody comes back healthy next year, and we'll get hopefully the version of the Braves that we thought we would have next year. This year goes down as a complete blip on the radar. The quickly we can get it over, the quickly we can forget about it. It's just done.
And has been. That's the thing for a while now. I guess that's why people are just trying to pick out the solitary moments of joy that they can take from this team over the last course stretch of the season. I'm going to talk about this at some point during the show. There's a commercial going on right now on ESPN. I don't know what it's for. I'm waiting to find that out. Oh, I just found out what it was for. And I am surprised that this commercial was allowed to air on ESPN. I'll explain what I'm talking about in a little while. But coming up next, Will McFadden breaks down the game last night. Don't go anywhere. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app, Chris Thomas tonight. Obviously, a very difficult scene last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with Mo Norris and that situation, him having to be carted off in an ambulance. But we did find out good news late last night and this morning that he looks like he's going to be just fine. Posting an Instagram update today, thanking everybody for their well wishes. And hopefully we can move on from what was a unique and historic event last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll talk about that and the actual game itself with our next guest on the WadeFord.com hotline. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you on a Saturday until 6:30. Will McFadden joins me, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, let's start here. How would you describe the atmosphere in the building last night when the events unfolded with Mo Norris?
Oh, Chris, I mean, it was hard. I mean, it was tough to watch. And I think, you know, Raheem Morris's press conference afterwards reflected that tone and the kind of severity of the moment. It really, I think, kind of snuck up on people because of the nature of how it happened. But then immediately it became very clear, as these things often do, started with the players closest to him, then kind of reverberated out to the sidelines, coaching staff, and then permeated kind of, as you said, the whole atmosphere in the stadium. So, you know, really, really glad to see the good news coming out today. But it really pivoted everybody's mindset very quickly from football to real life.
How long did it take you guys to understand what was going on with the players on the field from the snap of the ball to Emory Jones to the eventual prayer circle and disbandment of play on the field?
Yeah, you know, I saw Joe Patrick's tweet as well, and then his sentiments, which were he didn't realize that the reason the clock was running was because Emory had snapped the ball and they were all kind of choosing to stand there and just let the clock run out. I didn't realize that either until, frankly, I saw that tweet. So that it was a situation where you kind of didn't know, because as Norris was being loaded into the ambulance and everything, I was watching Raheem Morris and Dan Campbell talk together kind of near but away from the main huddle. And yeah, I was wondering, okay, is that something that they're coming to a mutual agreement on? Here's what we're going to do. Does it start with the players? Things like that. It sounds like it was a mutual kind of decision to get things going. So kudos to the players for kind of buying into that. And again, I think that moment, it was bigger than football. That's what everybody said. And then I think it was good that they called the game with, you know, 6.5 minutes left on the clock and just said, hey, we recognize this. We're going to suspend the game. I thought that was a good call, too.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just no need with emotions and everything running that high to try to get back into football mode after that. Now, with that said, there was a lot to like in the game that was played on the field, Will. The defense, I think, first of all, to talk about just the activity, just the swarming nature of defense. Big hit ability, the ability to force the ball out of the opposing quarterback's hands. I thought that was refreshing and very exciting.
Yeah, no, Chris, it was definitely something that was remarked upon multiple times to me, honestly, last night, was just how aggressive, attack-oriented, which are all the words that have been coming out of Flowery Branch throughout training camp, this defense was. I think you really felt it first and foremost with DeMarco Helms, and that is a player you have high hopes for in a very kind of defined role for him. I think he's maybe one of the easiest players to kind of figure out exactly what he brings to this team. We saw it on display last night. So, yeah, the defense and then the pass rush, you know, really at times, Arnold Ebiketie, that was – I don't think he's going up against the caliber, like a starting level of player. You know, I don't know, slights to whoever was in there for the Lions. I don't frankly know right now. But seeing him just purely speed rush around the edge and knock the ball loose, like, you have to think that that's translatable to Sundays when the regular season starts. I thought Jalen Walker played well. We saw the respect I think James Pierce was getting, Billy Bowman there to recover a fumble. So yeah, like the defense played well. And I think that is one of the most encouraging signs from that game.
We're talking with Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. You mentioned Helms. How does his performance last night impact the potential depth and rotation of the safety room? I mean, I know you said they liked him already. He's coming off the injury, but You have Jordan Fuller. You have Xavier Watts. Of course, you have Jesse Bates. That's a lot of depth for only one open position as a starter.
I kind of think they're going to utilize all of them. I think right now the clearest battle to me is probably between Xavier and Jordan Fuller, just because I think skill set Venn diagrams overlap a little bit more. Again, I like DeMarco Helms, think Keanu Neal, right? Like that is the more traditional box safety, playing downhill, enforcer type. And we also saw, I think, some of the bad with DeMarco in that deep play that he gave, you know, that they connected on. Like, so you have in mind a clear way to use him. Xavier and Jordan, it could kind of come down to, all right, who do we trust the most going into week one? Xavier has played well. He hasn't really had as many standout moments as a James Pierce, you know, but I do think that he is somebody who is mature enough to handle everything if he goes in. But really, I think they're going to rotate the safeties. Jesse's going to be out there a lot, but if Jesse has to come off the field, they're going to feel confident in sliding one of those two other guys in there, and then DeMarco is going to come in, you know, when you feel confident about maybe what the other team is going to be doing, and you want to put that guy in there for that reason.
Couple of questions about personnel roster decisions. Why, to the best of your knowledge, maybe some of these are injuries that I'm unaware of at this point, did the following people not play or get reps? Carlos Washington, Casey Washington, Braylon Trice, Clark Phillips.
Yes. So I believe, so Carlos we knew was dinged up. And then Braylon and Casey, like Casey played really well in the scrimmage. So I do think, and they've said, the coaching staff has said kind of all along, they are looking at this a little bit case-by-case basis, and one day will inform the next. And I think the way that he has played recently may have earned himself not a night off, but they feel comfortable, I think, in what they've seen from Casey Washington, and frankly, like I do too. I think he's played really well. He's taken kind of a noticeable jump kind of after the first week of camp. After that, Braylon Trice was a little bit of a mystery as well. I was kind of looking for him. Who's to say if they don't bring him in? I mean, the strength of the defensive line is the rotation. However, that also means you're playing a lot of those guys in the preseason as well. Like we saw Rook and Brandon Dorlis out there for a little while, Kentavious Street, those guys. I know those are interior, but I think Braylon Trice is working in that mix a little bit more. And he just kind of came back. I do think they could be searching for ways to get him on the field at this point. Clark was also a little bit of a mystery. That'll be something I think we'll ask Raheem maybe Monday. But yeah, the injuries, they happen at this time of year. And sometimes guys get dinged up and you don't always get a chance to ask why until a couple of days later.
I know it's preseason. I know it's one game. But if Kirk Cousins does eventually get moved, I felt pretty good about what I saw from Easton Stick last night, Will.
Yeah, he looked really good. And I think that like it was kind of crazy looking at the Shedeur Sanders hype all on Twitter and kind of them cross-checking that with Easton Stick's box score. And, you know, I know he didn't throw two touchdowns or whatever, but he threw one, and he threw a pretty nice one. There really wasn't a bad throw. Maybe there was one where you kind of felt like he'd like to have it back, but he looked in command. He honestly threw the ball from a variety of arm angles. I didn't really know he had that part of his game. Like I kind of just didn't know he had that in him, and I love to see it. But I will say Emory Jones was also kind of getting hot there before the game was suspended. And if you look at the overall box score for both quarterbacks, I think they were completing like 82% of their passes. Now, that's not everything, but there were also some shots down the field, right? So I think you combine those two elements and you start getting a nice idea of what this offense they have envisioned for Michael Penix Jr., which is a healthy dose of shots down the field with a little bit of management style, get the ball out to the backs, utilize some screens, that type of offense. So I liked what I saw, and I really liked Easton Stick running it.
All right, so a couple more before we get out of here. Are you concerned at all about the state of the offensive line getting any reps in preseason with Neusel being the new center and McGarry? I know the Falcons have said the blind side thing is not really a thing, but do you, I guess, care is the right, not the right word, but the word I'll use, if the offensive line goes into week one with their main action being that scrimmage on Wednesday and then the work against the Titans this week?
Yeah, I think joint practices are going to be huge. The scrimmage is going to be huge. I mean, Caleb McGarry is going up against James Pierce Jr. a lot in practice. And when he's not, he's going up against Leonard Floyd or Arnold Ebiketie. So it's like he's getting some quality reps on that blind side. And I do think that there is something to that, but I do also think that there are plenty of ways that can be mitigated and he can be helped. And I think Caleb's actually improved in that area over the last couple of years, just kind of quietly and under the radar. What I'll say about offensive line is if you play one, you kind of got to play them all, because otherwise it's not a true one-to-one type of preparation. You know, like if you're Caleb McGarry, you need to be next to Chris Lindstrom. And if you're Chris Lindstrom, you need to be next to Caleb and Ryan Neusel. Otherwise, it's like not the true chemistry. So, yes, Ryan Neusel probably like could have stood to play just to get some of those reps. But he also started 8 games last season. And I think those are far more meaningful reps in preparation. So they have prioritized team in practice throughout training camp. That's giving the offensive line a lot of work, because they're not, you know, excluded from 7-on-7. They're getting all of these reps. So if there's really one part of Atlanta's, you know, starting offense I'm not worried about, it's the offensive line. The depth that I saw last night, especially on the interior, yeah, had me a little bit concerned, but we'll see if they bounce back.
Kicking battle. Lenny Krieg boots one that could have been good from 65 last night, but he misses one from 53. But it sounds like Koo has had the edge in camp.
Yeah, I do think that there's a level of confidence in Younghoe to kind of bounce back. I do think injuries just kind of nagging throughout the year probably did play a little bit of a role, and he obviously ended on IR. I think that they expect him to handle those duties come week one. I will say that, you know, Lenny Krieg, when I've seen him in practice, he has been more erratic than Koo. You know, he has tended to miss, and when he misses, he'll miss, you know, a couple in a row. Koo has missed a couple as well. But when Krieg hits it, there's some loft to it, which we saw on that 57-yarder that, as you said, looked like it would have been good from 65. So because he is an international player, and because they did release Zaire, the other international player on the roster, a little bit ago, you can see a world where they use that roster exemption on him, and they're able to keep kind of both kickers around. That would make a lot of sense. But at this point, yeah, like it's Koo's job, I think, to lose. And I don't even know if that's the right way to say it. I think it's more like it's Krieg's job to win. And I think at this point, that's a tall task.
Before I let you go, do you think we see either Michael Penix or Kirk Cousins at all this preseason?
At this point, I would lean no. You never know, but last night, you know, was a good reminder of again how, like, when the worst case scenario is on the table, there's a level of risk mitigation that you got to have to make sure guys get to the regular season healthy, and those are two of the most important guys on the roster. So I would lean probably not.
Will, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll chat soon.
Yeah, of course, Chris, anytime.
All right, that is Will McFadden, AtlantaFalcons.com, senior writer and editor. Good stuff there, covering everything that happened last night. That 57-yarder, though, E, that was one of the most impressive kicks I've ever seen. Like, you actually heard it off his leg through the TV, which is crazy. All right, coming up next, let's talk some Braves, shall we? They're in between a doubleheader right now. We'll check in with our buddy Rowan Kavner, MLB on Fox Insider. What does he think about the state of the Braves and what they should do this offseason? Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 6:30. Let's welcome in our buddy Rowan Kavner of Fox Sports MLB. Rowan, let's start here in Atlanta. Unfortunately, the season is nothing short of a complete dumpster fire at this point. Are you surprised at the deadline they were not more active one way or the other?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't sell more. And I think, you know, obviously the first half went about as bad as it possibly could have gone. But it went bad enough that it was hard at that point to envision, you know, anything really happening in the second half to go on. I know they've been on magical runs before, but it was hard to see that with this group, with the pitching injuries that happened. And so you think, all right, there's not going to be a lot of seasons, you would hope, that look like this. This is a chance to bolster a farm system maybe that could use some more help for sure. You start going through the pieces now, and you look at who the rentals are and the way that Ozuna's been, you know, struggling and banged up, and the season Iglesias has had, you know, sure, like there's probably not a whole lot out there that you're going to get for that, but to not do really help your future, I was surprised by that.
Speaking of the future, is there any scenario in which you foresee the Braves bringing back their longtime, or honestly, Brian Snicker?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting topic and conversation, and obviously he could make that decision easy for everyone if he decides, you know, to retire, which is, I think, a possibility, a likelihood, you know, whatever you want to call it there. And that's an easy way for everyone to kind of just start fresh. You know, if he decides I don't want to stop, that obviously creates a uncomfortable situation for a guy that's, you know, had these big successes with this team. I wouldn't count on it happening that he's back next year. Like if it were just me guessing here, but you know, if he wants to continue, that's going to be an uncomfortable spot. Cause, and again, as bad as this year's been, you know, the way last year ended wasn't great. They haven't gone back to the CS since they won the World Series. This is an extended stretch, and you know, obviously winning a World Series can buy you time. When you're talking about 3-4 years of not getting to where you hope to go again, I think it's no surprise that you're wondering what might be next. And man, if this is not rock bottom, that's a
player to keep an eye on for their future long term here. Michael Harris obviously is bound as of late. We hope that this is the guy he's going to be. Do you think he still has superstar potential? And then Ozzie Albies is kind of falling off a cliff out of nowhere, Rowan. Do you think they should exercise his $7 million option in the offseason?
Yeah, I am still a Michael Harris believer. And, I don't know about superstar potential because, you know, I don't know where the ceiling is offensively. But I do know that what he gives you defensively provides a nice baseline. And, again, you said it, you're starting to kind of see the turnaround that you wish you could have seen, you know, 2 months ago and when, you know, the season was at least still the possibility of maybe turning things around, but it's nice to see it happening at some point. I still believe in Michael Harris. All these things is tough. And man, we've talked for years about, wow, this is one of the most incredible contracts. And now you're in a situation where, is it worth it? It's kind of crazy to think we're at this point, but when you're, you know, not much defensively and you're downturn offensively the way that we've seen so far, yeah, you got to think about moving on. Looking at this team in 2026, you know, where do they need to upgrade? The middle infield has to be addressed. I mean, they need to figure something out there. I don't think you can get what you're getting out of all of these at second and then the shortstop position be the worst offensively in baseball, which is what. You could think about picking that up and hoping he can tap back into what we've seen from him before. If you are able to upgrade at shortstop, if you're not, then I think you got to look at all your options there at second base, but definitely believe more in the future of Michael Harris than what we're seeing right now from Albies.
We know there's a good chance, as we're talking with our buddy Rowan Kavner of Fox Sports MLB, that at least two of the projected starters for next year, and A.J. Smith-Shawver and Grant Holmes will not be back for the following season. Holmes is going to try, but if that doesn't work, he'll also need some version of Tommy John surgery, traditional or the UC brace that a lot of these guys are getting now.
Yeah.
There's enough out there in the market in the offseason. The Braves could fill out sort of their, I would say they probably need 3 through 5 or 4 through 5. Is there enough quality depth out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about, you know, possibly, you know, a 4th, 5th option, I think you can definitely, you know, find that. I'm kind of curious to see how some of these guys end up when you're thinking about, you know, obviously like guys like Zach Gallen ended up staying. I think Framber's going to be a huge, someone that a lot of people are going to really, really want. So when you're not having, though, to get necessarily a 1 or 2, you need depth. You just need pieces. That is out there. You can go find a 3rd or a 4th or a 5th, you know, starter. A lot of this is going to depend, though, on, you know, what version of Strider do you have? What version of Schwellenbach do you have? What happens with Chris Sale at 37? So as much of a question as there is with, you know, Grant Holmes and, you know, as you mentioned, I think you need to upgrade somewhere at starting pitcher just to build some more depth. I would expect to see some depth options added there. But I do think, you know, if Strider can kind of find his way, that still provides some optimism. We know, you know, if Schwellenbach's healthy, what he can do as well. So that's a nice starting spot. But yeah, that group definitely, I think, needs to add some depth.
When it comes to the state of the bullpen, Rowan, it might be even worse than the rotation. To me, there's maybe 1 or 2 guys they would look to bring back. Do you think it's possible? I mean, I'm sure we see 1 or 2 examples of it every year, but is it possible to rebuild an entire back end of the bullpen in one off season?
I mean, we've seen 2 New York teams rebuild the bullpen in a deadline. So, I think that position is so volatile from year to year. I think that's doable. Yeah, I would feel a whole lot better about being able to do that, than having to, you know, go have to find another ace or something like that. I think it is, you know, doable. Do I think they're going to go splurge to go fix that? No. But you look at a team, like I think about, like, you know, the Rangers, who their bullpen was just terrible, and you make enough moves kind of at the margins that you get a good season from 1 or 2 of these guys and you can kind of be able to fix that. So I do think, you know, that is a spot, that is a group, a unit that is easier to fix than some, if you can add, you know, 2 or 3 arms that you trust. I think that's possible, but that, yeah, when I look at what this team needs to do in 2026 to get back on track, they need to fix the back end of the bullpen. They need to look at the middle infield. And I think those things are doable. And I think bullpen's a little bit easier to look at than, you know, trying to find a shortstop, because I think everyone would like an elite one of those.
You mentioned teams that were successful during the trade deadline. Who were your biggest winners and maybe a couple of losers, teams that needed to add a punch but didn't?
Yeah, I think, you know, I look at the Mariners. Clearly, they needed more pop at first base and third base, and they get arguably the two of the best options for both of those positions with Suarez and Naylor. And I think you could look at that team and at least make an argument that that's the most stacked roster in the American League. So that's a big winner for me. I don't know that there was a team that needed a position more than the Phillies needed a closer, and they go out and get arguably the best one available in Duran, and he's really just kind of lifted the spirits of that group really quickly. I think that was a huge add. And then I would have said, you know, I look at the Mets and Yankees and think, wow, those two teams are what they did with the bullpen. That's, you know, incredible work. And then obviously it has not gone the way the Yankees would have hoped with that group so far. But yeah, again, you know, relief units are volatile. I expect over the long haul, getting those guys will be, you know, a big help. And now I'm just curious to see what happens with the Padres, who had a lot of areas to upgrade, and they decided we're just going to upgrade all of them. I mean, AJ Preller at the deadline, it's like a bull in a china shop. And I'm just glad that he's a character in this universe as someone who just covers the sport, because it makes July 31st a whole lot more exciting. You never know, you know, how much of the farm he's going to leverage. And he said, dude, we have a chance, let's go for it. And you think, wow, you're giving up the whole future to go do this. But somehow we say that every year. They're all in. They're putting all their chips in. And then the next year happens, they give up the farm, and they're able to do it again. So that was exciting. Obviously, they're better now. They have to leverage a lot of their future to do that. Those are the teams that kind of stand out to me. We mentioned the Braves as a team that I thought needed to do some more, but you know, they didn't have a ton of pieces to be able to go do that. I think the Cubs not getting and look, if you were a team that needed relief pitching, you were in a lot of luck at this deadline. If you were a team that needed a starting pitcher, a guy you could really trust in October, that was a lot harder. And so I look at a team like the Cubs. They have 1 year with Kyle Tucker. They're right there at the, you know, near the top of the Central, one of the best teams in the National League, I think the most dynamic offense. And I thought they could have used another ace. They weren't able to get that. I would have said the Red Sox as well, a team that I thought could have paired someone with Crochet if they were able to give up enough. They weren't able to do a whole lot at the deadline. And then another NL Central team, the Brewers, who doesn't seem to matter because they just keep winning with whoever's out there. But I thought they could have tried to add some pop. I thought Suarez would have been a really good candidate. They have more pitchers than they know what to do with. That would have been a good match, I thought, for Arizona. They weren't able to do that. We'll see if that matters. Clearly, for regular season purposes, it doesn't. But this is a team that hasn't done a whole lot in the postseason. I thought they could have used another power bat, and they weren't able to get that.
When it comes to what's going on in Cleveland with this gambling situation, what do you make of all that?
It's not great. It's troubling. I'm not sure that it's like necessarily hugely shocking that we're seeing players get involved with this. But when you're talking about, you know, some players on the fringes, it's one thing. When you're talking about one of the best closers in the game, it's not great. And when you see these kind of, what do they call, micro bets or prop bets or whatever, where you're talking about, you know, betting on one pitch or something like that, where these guys could do that and it doesn't even affect the outcome of the game, I think that becomes more tempting, more tantalizing. And obviously we don't know all the specifics yet, but it's clearly not good. That was obviously a player that at the deadline would have been really interesting for a lot of teams, but just take that out of it. Who knows when he's going to be able to pitch again? And who knows, you know, where this ends? It seems like with at least Cleveland that those are the only two guys, you know, impacted, but they got to find a way to curb this in player, you know, with player betting. But I don't know how you necessarily do that when sports betting is such a huge part of the game right now.
So as we look towards the playoffs here, you mentioned the Yankees. They get Aaron Judge back. Do you feel like they have enough firepower? You mentioned the additions that they made, unfortunately, when thrust into action, not exactly lighting it up so far. But they were a World Series team last year. Do you think they can get back?
I think the American League is just so wide open that if Judge can, I mean, just, it's still so much of this is just Judge's health. I mean, he's back tonight. Like, if Judge is in peak form and able to come back from the arm injury and look like himself, they're going to have a chance. And the American League is so wide open. I mean, you're looking at the Tigers, who didn't do a ton of the deadline and had kind of been trending the wrong way. I mean, they did a ton of the deadline. They didn't do a lot of impact moves at the deadline, though. The Blue Jays have been a huge story, but, I think that top of the AL East is still kind of open for anyone. The Red Sox have been super hot, but also didn't really do a whole lot at the deadline to help themselves. And then you have the Astros, who are just completely banged up, and the Mariners, who I think, again, I would say are probably the most talented roster in the American League, but, you know, are they able to kind of put it together, and are those offensive pieces going to take a step back at T-Mobile Park? We don't really know yet. We got to see. So I think just because there's no clear cut, this is for sure the team to beat is definitely better than the Yankees. I think they still have a shot. You still have Fried and Rodon at the top of that rotation. The offense is still really, really powerful. It's been the best in baseball all year. They are 25-31 since the start of June. That's not great. They're playing really sloppy, but if they can fix some of that, they still have the talent to, I think, get where they want to go.
All right, before I let you go, in the NL, if I gave you the Brewers and let's say the Dodgers or the field, what would you take right now?
To win the World Series?
To make the World Series.
Oh, to make the World Series. That's a good question. I think because the Dodgers still have to be the favorites, I would probably still go that direction. The Brewers are so interesting because I think it's incredible what they've done, but again, they haven't really shown in the postseason that can translate yet. I don't necessarily trust that that that's going to be, you know, a team that's going to go make a huge deep October run. They are the best team in baseball right now. I think I'd be, you know, more afraid of the Cubs, Phillies, and Mets. I think the Cubs have the most dangerous offense in the National League right now, and you know, the Phillies and the Mets are capable of going on a run here, and that Phillies rotation is as scary as it gets, you know, in the National League. So that's a great question. I think I would lean the Dodgers way, but man, that team hasn't looked the way that you want it to. I think that, at least if you're a Dodgers fan, I think, you know, they're kind of banking on all these guys coming back in the second half, either healthier or better. But you have a lot of down years offensively. You got, you know, Mookie Betts is still trying to figure it out. Teoscar Hernandez has been banged up. They get Blake Snell back. I still think that's the team to beat right now. But it's wide open. I mentioned it's wide open in the American League. It's wide open in the National League too. Like, there's no clear cut, really, really, really great team that sort of stands above everyone else. And so I think it'll make for a really fun fight to the finish here.
Rowan, appreciate the time as always. We'll chat soon and we'll check you out at Fox Sports.
All right, guys.
That's our buddy Rowan Kavner there. Good stuff on MLB, the Braves, the trade deadline, the playoffs, and everything else involved. All right, when we get back, all right, I got to talk to Eric Slaughter about this. We're also going to get to five Falcons true and false questions, but there's a very prominent college football team that's hosting an open tryout for their school, and I think it looks nothing short of embarrassing. We'll talk about that next. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you till 6:30 on a Saturday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.